continue not to get, not to grasp, not to understand. There are lots of different understandings that float around about that. Your Christian faith is a collection of religious practices and devotion. You go to worship this many times, you receive these sacraments, you do these various acts, and that is the Christian faith. For some, it's adherence to a set of doctrines, and they're most concerned about being correct and having the correct doctrine and the correct interpretation of Scripture. For some, it's just kind of a perpetual sense of optimism, have faith. Everything will work out okay. God will take care of you. For some, it's a life devoted to service. Service to others, outreach with the church. For James, for instance, you might think that it was about bridling the tongue and controlling that little bonfire that can set a forest ablaze. Jesus calls us to something different. All those other things are pieces. They're part of the picture. But Jesus calls us to something different as the centerpiece. And in fact, what I think he's calling us to is a relationship of trust with him. Now, if we launch that relationship, then there are certain religious practices that help that. Gathering for worship, reading the Bible, praying, and so forth. Those are all things that help to build that relationship. Doctrine does matter. Doctrine is that shape of what we believe about God. And that begins to then influence how we live that faith out, how we see that faith. When we live a life trusting in Jesus, trusting in that relationship, then we can be optimistic. Not always optimistic in the short term. Sometimes life is a struggle. But we can be optimistic that our home is with God. And we can walk through whatever struggles we face in this life confident of our final destination. And certainly, like James reminds us, we need to bridle the tongue. And to have that relationship with Jesus means to bridle the tongue, to take control of that member of our body. Now, the disciples have just gone through a series of events with Jesus, but yet they still didn't seem to grasp that at the heart of it was not just a set of religious beliefs or a set of practices, but a relationship. There was the debate about eating with hands defiled. Some of the disciples were grabbing some grains as they were walking through the field and eating them without having ceremonially washed their hands. There was the healing of the Syrophoenician woman's daughter, which meant Jesus went into a Gentile home, something that would normally not be permitted of a good Jew. There was the feeding of the 5,000, the healing of a deaf man, the healing of a blind man. And they seem to still misunderstand what it is that he's really trying to guide them to, what he's trying to get them to. And finally, he sits down. Or rather, he doesn't sit down, they're walking along the road. And he poses the easy question first. Who do people say that I am? We all like to talk about other people's opinions, don't we? So they start off, well, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, others say one of the other prophets, depending on who their particular favorites happen to be. But actually, Jesus ignored all their answers and drilled right into the next question, which was, who do you say that I am? And it was Peter that jumped in, the old impetuous, walking on the water Peter. You are the Messiah. It was one of those moments. It was one of those flashes when he got it. And no doubt the other disciples got it in that moment. They saw This isn't just a deliverer of miracles. This isn't just somebody who offers some better teaching. This isn't just somebody who's going to challenge the religious leaders that frustrate us and burn us. Rather, this is a Messiah in whom we place our trust and in a relationship that can then bring us life. And yes, that life may include religious practices and devotions and service to others. And it may involve challenging the current leadership of the day. It may involve all of those things. But in that moment, he saw it. And I suspect that the other disciples had a moment there as well. And that's why Jesus responded then, "Don't tell anybody." He knew that people in general weren't ready for that message yet. They would misunderstand. As we find later on, they do misunderstand. They think that means he's going to be a military ruler and overthrow the Romans or kick the Romans out finally. They don't understand. But as soon as he tells them, "Okay, don't tell anybody about that. Here's what it's going to look like. The Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, that is, the leaders of their own faith community, and be killed, and on the third day rise again." So as soon as they get this flash, then what it's about is trusting in this Messiah and placing our trust in a person, in a relationship, rather than in a set of practices and doctrine. As soon as they get it, they're reminded, now what that path means is suffering. What that path means is not comfort and luxury and ease, but suffering. And Peter in his own way then demonstrates that really in his heart of hearts he didn't get it yet. He had that flash, but the flash went away. And he says to Jesus, "Lord, that can never happen to you. That's not how it's supposed to be. We're supposed to win, right? It's supposed to look good. We're supposed to have success." Jesus' response was quite famously, "Get behind me, Satan." It is the temptation of the devil to be drawn from sacrificial living for God to the appearance of human success. That was at the heart of that temptation. He was still holding on to that human view. So what Jesus calls us to instead is not to worry about those things, not to worry about whether we look successful, not to worry about whether we look like winners, but rather to be concerned that we are trusting ourselves fully and completely to that relationship with that Messiah, the one who has indeed come to save us and to redeem us. And he tells us that means we have to take up our cross and follow him. Take up the very instrument of our own ending and follow him. Now, I hear that expression trivialized often. I remember once I was talking to a young woman and her mother. And young women and mothers can, have issues sometimes. And finally, the young woman, in exasperation, looks at her mother and says, "Mother, you're my cross to bear." That's not what Jesus is talking about. He's not talking about, those little annoyances. He's not talking about the annoying boss or the troublesome neighbor or those things. He's talking about actually being willing to turn away from the priorities and comforts of this life and take up what will ultimately mean the death of the priorities of this life within us. And live a life devoted to him. Live a life in relationship to Jesus. It's not a promise this life is wonderful and full in the short term, but it's a promise that it is complete in the long term. I was listening to a little video recently. And it was a young woman, a self-professed millennial, who sat down to talk with a 95-year-old World War II veteran from what Tom Brokaw famously labeled the greatest generation. And she was thinking about it in terms of the contrast to her generation as a millennial, basically 20-somethings, who the kind of default view is, frankly, in many quarters, that they're probably the worst generation. Lazy, unmotivated, entitled, expect everything to be handed to them, and so forth. And this World War II vet said to her, "We do not thrive in luxury. We humans need hardship. We need struggle." And she realized the wisdom in that. She realized that when things come too easily for us, it is spiritually destructive to us. When Jesus wants us to take up our cross, it's not simply that he wants misery for us, but he recognizes that that's what brings us to a place of wholeness and completeness. So remember, our faith is not about our practice. It's not defined by what church we go to, or what prayer book we use, or what hymns we sing. It is defined by a relationship with a living Messiah who comes to us to redeem us. And then we can use those other things as ways to build that relationship, as tools for building that connection to that Messiah, that we may so trust in him that we are able to walk through the struggles and suffering that comes in this life and find the fullness and richness of life in him at the end.